Hello, I'm Jay Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. And today I'm joined by reviews editor, Matthew Leyland. 3 weeks on
Hello.
The bounce, Matthew.
I'm going for the hat trick. This is my trilogy.
Yeah, you're just like knocking it out the park. So this week we are rating Racing Simulator, not a game, mention that. Racing Simulator, turned movie, Gran Turismo, Disney Ride turned movie, Haunted Mansion, and Italian coming-of-ager Le Monsita. Wasn't a game, wasn't a ride, wasn't anything else before. I don't know, actually. I probably should have checked that, shouldn't I? Maybe it was like a toy. Who knows?
Like PS1 game or something.
Maybe there was.
L.
Yeah, you had to dance Space around a dining room table fully made up with great nails. That was the thing.
It could happen.
It could. Anyway, before we get onto that, Matthew, what else have you been up to and watching this week?
I finally got around to watching Babylon. So that's on Now TV now.
Yeah, what do you make of that? Because obviously that had people who really liked it and really didn't. Which side did you land on?
I'm kind of in between, to be honest. I did like it. I was quite pleased with myself, to be honest. I watched it on Sunday afternoon and didn't fall asleep. And it's over three-hour movie. So quite proud of myself. But I mean, I can't imagine anyone falling asleep during that film, given the kind of the excess and the pace of it. I mean, it kind of really grabs you by the lapels.
Well, I'm glad you said lapels. I didn't know where you were going with that.
Yes. No, only the lapels, no lower. Yeah, I did like it. I thought it was incredibly well done. I mean, the set pieces, the kind of extended takes and the marshalling of all the extras. I mean, Chazelle, he has a real knack for kind of making these great sort of symphonic set pieces, as we've seen in his other movies. I'm sorry I missed it on the big screen. I wouldn't say it's one of the best films about filmmaking I've ever seen, to be honest. I think there's quite a few others that kind of trump it. But I did enjoy it. And I really liked Margot Robbie and Brad Pitt in it. I thought they were both terrific.
The first 40 minutes of that film is insanely good, and you're like, if he keeps this up, you know, you've got this party that's just crazy, that opening party, and then it goes to that whole film set of craziness where Brad Pitt's actor is drunk and they're trying to catch the sunlight, and you're like, if he keeps this up for 3 hours, it's going to be amazing, and then it drops off a cliff. I feel very conflicted about that, but I just think Margot Robbie, surely with the Barbie billions that she's making and everything else that she's done and her choices in what she's doing as a producer, she's going to be an actor of the ages, isn't she?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, she's well on her way. Well, she's not on her way. She's arrived, isn't she? I mean, the amount of energy she just pours into these roles, just keeps getting more and more impressive. Yeah, and it was so great to see her like going from a kind of relatively supporting character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood to kind of really taking the lead here. And in Barbie, there's just absolutely no stopping her at the moment.
There is no stopping her, the girl from Neighbours. Yes, what have I been watching? Well, I haven't been watching very much because I've been on holiday for 2 weeks. But what I have been watching is My Own Skin After a Scorpion Bit Me. I went to Greece and discovered in Greece they have a Mediterranean red scorpion, which I thought was a leaf landing on me. I brushed it off. No, that was like being stung by a jellyfish. I had like a full kind of feeling numb in my arm. Disaster sting action, was interesting. But I'm quite enjoying the fact that I can say I've been stung by a scorpion now. It makes me feel a bit like, you know, Indiana Jones or something.
Well, I was going to say, how big was it? Because I learned from Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull that the bigger, the better in terms of the danger. So
it was very small. And very, very angry. Furious, absolutely furious. Trapped it in a glass because this was inside my villa. Right. Trapped it in a glass to put it outside. It was going for it. It was trying to get out. I think it was cursing. It was absolutely apoplectic. So watch out for scorpions if you're in Greece. Also had an awful incident with a cubicle on a plane returning where I accidentally, my clothing dipped into someone else's piss all over the floor. So
it was Babylon-esque.
It was a little bit. I feel like, you know, I had a tussle with a poisonous creature, as Margot does in that.
Yeah.
And also had an involvement with urine. So yeah, you could call me Damien next time you need somebody for your next sort of Babylonian type film. I'm available. Shall we get on then and move away from We and Stings to what we can watch this week? Let's get your game face on then for this.
What is this?
It's a contest.
The best Gran Turismo players in the world get a chance to compete in professional racing.
Dude, this is real.
This is real.
I'm sorry. You really think you're going to take a kid who plays video games in their bedroom, you're going to strap them to a 200-mile-an-hour rocket? It'll tear them to pieces.
So this is Gran Turismo. For people who are not aware of what this is, Matthew, fill us in.
Apparently, the full official title is Gran Turismo, based on a true story. Mm. So this is not a direct adaptation of the racing simulator, but rather based on the life of a racing simulator player who then became a real-life racing car driver. So it's kind of like The Last Starfighter, if anyone remembers that. But
you nerd. I love it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's been a few. There's like the Ender's Game. That was another one where kids are good at video games, or they actually think they're fighting a virtual war, but it's a real war. So it's kind of like a precedent for things like this. But this is based on a true story, incredibly, about this guy, Jan Mardenborough, who was this great Gran Turismo player. He logged hours and hours and hours. And then as part of a kind of a Nissan promotion, who they set up this competition to find who were the best Gran Turismo players who could then get a chance to become real life racing drivers. And he excelled in this competition and then did go on to race on real life courses like Le Mans. And so we follow him. He kind of, he has a mentor figure in the shape of David Harbour. He's the sort of gruff, cynical trainer who doesn't quite believe that this kid's going to do it. But then they kind of form a bond. And then you've got Orlando Bloom, who's the marketing executive for Nissan, who's always got his eye on the bottom line. And then you've got Jan's parents, played by Jumon Hounsou and Jerry Horner.
Yeah.
Making Ginger a rare Spice appearance in movies. Yeah, Ginger Spice. In a lot of ways, it's a very sort of formulaic racing movie, kind of classic underdog story as we follow him as he makes his way, as he kind of grows in confidence and tries to apply these skills that he's learned on the joypad to the actual steering wheel.
So it's directed by Neil Blomkamp, who he's done a lot of sort of social combined with action films. This does try to say a little bit about social commentary. Jan is from Wales, from a low-income household. The chances of him getting into racing are slim because this is a rich man's game. You know, how do you even begin to get into that unless you have some money to put you through go-karting and then onto, the smaller tracks and then work your way up and to be able to do it, or have your daddy put you in a team as one of the top racers has done. Mm. So, there is this sort of element, but that's sort of done away with quite quickly and we just get into racing, crashing, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Did it work for you dramatically?
It did. Yeah, I have to say I'm a sucker for this type of film. I mean, it really, really sticks to the Rocky playbook. Like you say, it's like a million to one shot. Like Rocky, he kind of gets this chance that he wouldn't likely otherwise have. And there's kind of elements of Top Gun. I mean, there's like a very sort of direct reference to Top Gun at one point, and Star Wars even, especially like in the whole mentor rookie relationship. It's incredibly predictable. It's quite cynical, really. I mean, it is essentially a promotion for Gran Turismo. I mean, there's branding all over the shop. I mean, anytime anyone picks up a personal device, there's
it's a Sony
a
one
brand. Yes, indeed, it feels like it's very much designed to flog more PlayStations. But yeah, I think it did work. I think it's nicely paced. It is quite different for Neil Blomkamp to be doing something non-genre like this, but I think he kind of handles it well. I really thought the MVP was David Harbour. I mean, I think he really earns the film its third star, absolutely, because he's so kind of gruff and likable and charismatic, and he sells some of the more sort of clunky dialogue. So I'm not sure how well it would play without him, but he kind of gets it over the line. And the racing scenes are nicely done. There's lots of use of drones, kind of whizzy drone footage, and they kind of increase in jeopardy and peril as they go on. So there's kind of a nice sort of escalation of stakes, and the kids were likable. So yeah, I thought it was very solid, but at the same time, have seen it all before many times.
I agree that there's nothing new under the sun here. And, you know, you could look at it in comparison to Barbie, which is also, you know, a cynical and commercial drive to get people to buy stuff. And it's vastly different to that. It's very much in the sort of standard, you know, fulfills expectations of what you might think that would be. But yeah, as you say, I think it gets by on just really sort of swishy visuals and, you know, the great editing that really does, even though you know exactly what the outcome of many of these races are going to be and these moments, you genuinely go along with it because of the soundtrack and the editing and the cinematography that makes it propulsive and gives you that sense of being in a car. But yeah, it's David Harbour all the way for me. Unfortunately, you know, the lead playing Jan, Archie Madekwe, is a little bit just blank for me and a bit, and, you know, when Harbour's saying, "I don't see what we see in this kid," I'm like, got to agree. But Harbour is so, he is just like an Obi-Wan. He's, you know, like all of those gruff guys on the ship telling Maverick that, you know, he's no good. He's that, but he's also got this real softness. And that's what Harbour really has, that sort of real gruff exterior with this heart inside. And that's what he brings to a lot of other roles. So he's magnificent in this, I think.
Yeah.
Orlando Bloom, not so much. Like, one thing that really stuck out to me with him was his pronunciation of Harbour's character. Like, he's called Jack Salter, and everyone calls him Jack Salter. But Orlando Bloom insists on calling him Jack Salter. And it's like, why are you calling him that? No one else is. It's like, it keeps happening, and it's really distracting. So that's just a question for Orlando. What was your choice there with the pronunciation of that character's name? Why did you decide to do it differently? But yeah, he's very throwaway and just playing this sort of sociopathic almost guy from Nissan. And there's some weird messaging here as well, isn't there? There's like, people really should be driving cars and like stop taking Ubers and get in a car. And the generation that sits and plays games are just like, really shouldn't be expected to achieve anything, which is a bit odd. But overall, it swept me along with it. And I have to say, I had a little tear. And, you know, let's talk about Jerry. She's not the greatest actress, but you can understand why she's there. She is married to Christian Horner, who is Red Bull's like principal and is in the pit and is doing all that stuff. She understands this world. So for her to be there, for me, I didn't find it annoying and sort of distracting. I just found it like, okay, that's a nod to this world and I get it. Yeah. But I can imagine that, you know, she could great on some people.
There were a few gasps at the press screening when she turned up. I think people who weren't aware that she was in it, there was, you know, a murmur going around the crowd, you know, like, is that her?
And, you know, her delivery of the line, "These lentils are quite nice."
Yes, the lentil bake.
Yeah, the lentil bake. You know, that was some great sort of method there. I'm sure Jerry enjoys a lentil bake at home.
Yeah.
So I felt like there was truth in that. But yeah, it's a decent, fun thing. And have you ever played The Simulator? I have not.
No, I have not. No.
So I don't know what it's like from an experience of if you are mad on this simulator, not a game, simulator, and what your experience of that is and if they've managed to translate that. But there's some really cool little special effects where the car kind of opens up and all the nuts and bolts come out of it to sort of give you that idea of the symbiosis between what it's like to play a VR version and what it's like to be in the real car. So, yeah, I think really quite well done. Another product turned film. That's
yet
pretty
another
decent
one. They're mounting up, aren't they? We're still not done yet. We've still got
BlackBerry.
She's going to roll and roll, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we're saying quite a good time at the cinema. Put your pedal to the metal and get there.
It's quite a long film, and it's over 2 hours. I don't think it outstays its welcome. That's probably something to bear in mind, though, that you are going to be in the cinema a while. You might think a film like this would be slightly shorter, but it is quite a long one.
Matthew, if you're a gamer, you sit for a great deal of time and you're absolutely fine with it. So
you'll be well used to that.
I think people can put up with 2 hours. Okay, so that is Gran Turismo. What is the new title of it, Matthew? It's
based on a true story.
Gran Turismo: Based on a True Story. chips off the tongue. That is out in cinemas right now. Okay, so from a game to a ride, it's this.
This mansion is unhinged.
These ghosts definitely don't want to leave.
Death lurks around every corner.
God, give us a break. There's so many bad people in the world. Haunt them.
Amen.
I do like surprises.
Is anybody else seeing this?
I hope you do too.
We're in a fight, whether we like it or not.
Or else we're stuck here for eternity.
If this comes down to an exorcism, we're in big trouble.
So this is Haunted Mansion, which is based on the ride at Disneyland and Disney World. Matthew, how have they fleshed that out, or have they?
Yeah, so this is actually the second movie based on the ride. You could probably be forgiven for not remembering that 20 years ago there was a version with Eddie Murphy, although that was crucially called The Haunted Mansion.
And this is just Haunted, yes.
Yeah, the has been spirited away somewhere. But it's very much the same, very similar sort of setup. There's a mansion. It's haunted. The ghosts have secrets, and a group of people need to work out the secrets and defeat some evil and help solve some old mysteries. And at the center of this one, you've got Lakeith Stanfield. He's a tour guide. He's dealing with grief, and he's quite cynical about the existence of these spirits. But then,
why is a tour guide in this house?
Good question.
Because it's a private residence, is it not?
He does tours of other places, but then you have Rosario Dawson and her son. They move into this cavernous mansion, and then they get haunted by these spirits, these things that kind of regularly happen to them, and then they go to Lakeith Stanfield because he has a good knowledge of the local area, and he's a tour guide, and they ask him for help. And then he draws in further people. There's like a psychic played by Tiffany Haddish, Owen Wilson, who plays a priest. So they're kind of like a makeshift sort of Ghostbusters, and they all kind of congregate on this mansion to try and work out its secrets and stop themselves being haunted, because these spirits follow them. Once you've been in the mansion, you can be followed home by these spirits. So they need to find some way of exorcising them. And there is a kind of evil presence at the center of it all that needs to... their mystery needs to be unraveled so that they can be defeated and things turn back to normal.
The ride is very much a family ride. It's aimed at families, but it sounds a little bit creepy. How does it sit?
They've judged it fairly well in terms of the scares. I mean, there's like a few boo moments, but it's very sort of fleeting. I think they've kind of judged that fairly well, so they won't kind of... I mean, there is, if a child is particularly sensitive, it's probably not the best idea to take them to it. But yeah, there's nothing that's really going to alarm the families too much. I mean, it's all sort of played for laughs in a lot of ways. You know, that if it's a creepy moment, it'll soon be followed by a laugh. So it's in that kind of Goosebumps, Ghostbusters vein. You know, we're not sort of talking like the Conjuring universe or anything like that, or the Exorcist. So it's sort of family friendly. Although it's very strange that it's being released at the height of summer.
I know. This is so much why would you Halloween not? Why would you movie. Not do it in October? It seems very odd. Is it another commercial item to drive people to the parks? I don't know.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah, but it seems very odd. I mean, and especially. I mean, it has in the States, it's just being overshadowed by the likes of Barbie and Oppenheimer, and even things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So, yeah, that perhaps wasn't the wisest idea. And personally, I'd argue that it should have just gone to Disney Plus, to be honest, rather than the big screen. For all of its kind of star appeal, it's got like Jamie Lee Curtis is in it as well. And there's a few sort of starry cameos, but it did feel quite small screen to me in terms of its impact. I have to say, I was not a fan of this movie.
So should people be spending their money to take their kids? Summer holidays is upon us. Is this worth the cash?
I would say not necessarily, unless they've kind of rinsed all the other summer options. You know, if they've seen Barbie and Indy and Mission Impossible and Turtles, I'd certainly put most of those before this one. if you like spooks, if you've been to Disney and you've been on the ride. I think, I mean, I haven't been on the ride, but I understand there's lots of Easter eggs here. There's lots of kind of nods to the ride. So people will probably get some pleasure out of that.
Is there a bride? Is there a hat man? Is there a duck in a top hat?
I don't remember the duck. Yeah, there's a bride. Yeah, there's the top hat. There's a speaking candle. He was my favourite character, I have to say, the kind of living candle. I thought they could have used much more of him. I just feel like it didn't quite gel, really, because it's got some very sort of like Lakeith Stanfield's backstories. I mean, it's kind of, there's a lot of tragedy going on with him, and it doesn't kind of quite gel with the more sort of slapstick comedy that's going on elsewhere. And I just didn't find it that funny either, really. I mean, the odd sort of chuckle, but overall, no real sort of belly laughs. And it's a very convoluted plot as well. I feel like it could have been a bit more streamlined and made simpler, you know, for what it is in terms of what the concept is. But they keep sort of adding in elements and plot twists and new locations. So I felt like it was overcooked, really.
Mm. You are going to Disney World. Are you going to go on the ride? Has it inspired you to go and look for the hat box ghost and everything else?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think I'll be sort of looking for greater satisfaction from that, I think. So, yeah, I think I will indeed be going on that.
You haven't inspired me, I have to say. No. I don't feel like I'll be rushing out to see this one. It feels like there's other more exciting fare to take your kids to. And it also doesn't sound very much like a film that if you are an adult and without any children to pull along, that you'd really be enjoying this.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you're a horror fan, you're going to find it quite tame, I think, really. If you're looking for something more family friendly, I think the Goosebumps movies could do this sort of thing a lot better. They're a lot more kind of fun and anarchic.
Yeah. Okay, so that is Haunted Mansion, not The Haunted Mansion, which is a different film. And that is out in cinemas on Friday. Right, let's give up the rides and the games and let's go to Italy with this.
Io vengo da un'altra galassia e tu non hai poteri per aggiustarmi.
È pericoloso, sai? Soprattutto per te e per quell'amica tua.
Ha una fantasia galoppante quella bambina.
A me non mi preoccupano le fantasie dei bambini. Mi preoccupano di più le fantasie degli adulti.
Ma è più importante quello che abbiamo dentro o quello che abbiamo fuori?
So this is Limoncita, which I saw in Venice last year. So it's been a while coming out. Matthew, tell us about it.
Well, this is set in 1970s Rome. It focuses on a family, a husband, wife, and a few kids, but the main character is played by Luana Giuliani, who was assigned a female identity but is beginning to identify as a boy as they grow older. And their mother is played by Penelope Cruz, and she's going through a difficult marriage. Her husband, I mean, he's an utter
total cad. Sure,
yes,
total cad, shall we say. Yes,
he indulges in some very stereotypical 1970s corporate behavior at times. She's enduring these mental health issues. So the whole thing really kind of circulates around the relationship between mother and child as they kind of negotiate these difficulties they're facing at their different stages of life. And then you get these whimsical interludes, song and dance interludes, where the characters kind of escape into these fantasy worlds and perform songs and music. And then there's a slight element of new romance as well. But essentially it is about how these characters are kind of faring, how they're enduring their struggles as the film goes on.
Did you like it? I mean, I remember being quite enchanted by this. I love Penelope Cruz. I think it's wonderful to see her speaking Italian. I don't know what that sounds like to Italians. I'd love to know what her accent sounds like, but I think she's absolutely enchanting in this. That sort of sadness that she brings to it. She's this wonderful mother that's the fun parent, isn't she? That's her sort of role in this. And, you know, the dad's off making money and he comes home in his tie and he's smoking his cigarettes and he's like storming around and trying to be a hardcore dad. And she's the mother, the parent that cares, indulges, plays, very into play, and yet has this incredible sadness at the core of her that later on in the film does come to sort of a sad fruition. I think she's so excellent at playing this kind of role. And she looks like Sophia Loren in it, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
She's got this hair, this 70s hair and this makeup, and she's red nails, and she's always sort of got a cigarette and wearing a negligee. I just found her incredibly alluring. The story of the child and the sort of coming of age that was going on there found fine, but it was more about Penelope Cruz and her struggle as a mother. At a time that, you know, depression was not acknowledged, and certainly not the difficulties of being a parent and the sort of emotional labor that is taken with that. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And I really enjoyed the escapes to the song and dance numbers.
They're fun.
You know, they have moments when they set the table, they do it in a sort of song and dance fashion. But then there's these actual escapes to a black and white world where it's a sort of Bushby Berkeley set and everything. And I love that as well. Did it do it for you?
Yeah, partway. It kind of felt a little bit incomplete to me. Yeah, I totally agree. I think Cruz was absolutely the best thing in it. She's totally magnetic, but perhaps to the point where she kind of overshadows the child's story, because they're very kind of understated, so you are just kind of focusing on Cruz all the time. But yeah, she is magnificent. I mean, I think it's one of her best performances, like outside of the Almodovar films she's done. And she balances so well that kind of fragility, but being spontaneous at the same time, and being, you know, sure, having moments of great joy, but also sadness. I mean, she just plays it all so well. And she's so kind of effortlessly glamorous. She's just absolute movie star through and through.
Yeah, it sort of reminded me of the character she played in Vicky Cristina Barcelona, which I also liked for that sort of wildness, but also that sort of fragility that you're talking about. I mean, and this is a weird thing, but it sort of reminded me of Princess Diana, the sort of dynamic that was going on here, that, you know, these children had this very strict father, and she was the one that would encourage them to run down a street screaming and barging people out of the way, or at a dinner table, she'd slide off her seat and get under the table with the kids. She is a sort of manic pixie girl in a way, isn't she? But within this sort of very beautifully realized retro scenario, I mean, you really felt like the 1970s and the way...
Yeah, it's very authentic, isn't it?
Yeah, really get a sense of Rome in that time, and the cars that they drive, and, you know, they're going out to swim in the sea and day trips and things like that. And this whole weird incident where they go to this house and the children get locked in this underground space and the parents can't find them. And you're thinking, oh, is this going to be a different film? But it's not. It's again about how she as a parent reacts in complete contrast to the other parents in the situation. So, yeah, if you love Penelope Cruz and her work, this is an absolute zinger and a must-see.
Yeah, if you're a fan of hers, yeah, get in line, definitely. Be interesting to see if it gets any kind of awards traction, because I think reviews have been fairly mixed, but I mean, she could break out and the Academy does like her a lot, so wouldn't be wildly unsurprised to see her pick up a few nominations.
Yeah, I mean, it's about time. She's done so much good work. Did she get nominated for that one with Antonio Banderas where she was playing the crazy director and she was so great in that?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Official competition.
Yes. She should have been nominated for that. I thought she was excellent in that. But she's wonderful in this. And I wouldn't be sore if she got a nomination for this based on her past work. Because although the film perhaps isn't as good as her performance, she is, as you say, magnetic in it.
Go Penelope.
Okay.
She just gets better and better, doesn't she, really?
She does. She's
always been great, but she's just kind of...
Yeah, she just seems to find even more nuance and sort of just those big eyes. She's just like a deer, isn't she? A little baby deer. And there's so much emotion that goes through those big eyes of hers. I think she's magnificent. Okay, so if you enjoy a bit of 1970s sort of retro, if you love it, a bit of Italian cinema, if you love Penelope Cruz, this is a film for you. If not, maybe wait for it on streaming and just enjoy that whilst you cook your dinner. But I did enjoy this on a big screen, I have to admit. So that is Limoncita, and it is out in cinemas on Friday. So that's our three for this week, Matthew. Which would you say was the winner?
Well, certainly, I think Penelope Cruz's performance is the best thing out of all these films. But yeah, I'd have to say Gran Turismo. That would be my pick.
Yeah,
as formulaic as it is, but it kind of works.
It does what it says on the tin. You're not going to be like, oh, that's not what I thought that was. But it will satisfy. So yes, that would probably be mine as well. Okay, before we go then, we should remind listeners that you can subscribe to the podcast and it will just appear magically, makes life a lot easier. And we have time for a listener's question. This came in, obviously, off the news at the weekend that Barbie has made $1 billion. What toy do you want to see a movie of? I mean, it's hard to actually find a toy that hasn't had a movie made of it.
But dig deep.
But Matthew, what toy would you like to see a movie of?
I think it's time for Cindy now. Now we've had Barbie. I think we've got to have Cindy. See what they can Cindy's. Do with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With her bigger head. Kind of... Bigger head, smaller boobs. Yeah, she was nice.
She's the English.
Yes.
Barbie, is that right? Is that correct? She was the English like answer to Barbie, was she?
I don't know. I had her, but I don't know if she was produced in the UK. But yes, she was a very different looking doll, but the same sort of dimensions.
Yeah.
They don't make a Cindy anymore, do they?
I don't think so, no. But yeah, you know, perhaps now's the time for a revival. I mean,
I just sold all my Cindy's at auction, so I might regret that. I think I want like a sort of existential crisis of a glowworm. I had a glowworm. Did you have a glowworm?
I didn't know. I remember them, but no, I didn't. I never actually had the pleasure.
And the thing about them was that they looked cozy and cuddly, like you could really squish them, and they're designed to be cuddled in bed, but they had this rock hard plastic face that lit up a sickly ghostly greeny kind of glow. And if you tried to cuddle them, they just like squash into your cheek and they're actually quite uncomfortable. And I feel like that could be a very interesting sort of study of character. A glow worm that I'm thinking Javier Bardem could play, who wants to be cuddly. Charlie Kaufman, or maybe Michelle Gondry, someone like that. Wants to be cuddly, but it has this really hard face and children don't like to squash them to him. And what's he going to do with that? And could he find himself a soft glowworm girl friend, maybe? Or could he become like a glowworm hero? Like the other thing was, they didn't have arms or legs like that. That feels a bit limiting too. So I feel like they'd have a lot of issues, a lot of anger issues, and be frustrated. So that's what
a lot
I'm
of drama
for.
Here.
Yeah, I feel like potential. Get the glowworm movie, and that you know everybody has a light inside themselves.
You've got the tagline right there.
Just got to find the light within. You can have that. You can have that.
I think
Charlie
you've
Goldsman.
Thought about this. Do you have a secret script treatment?
I am writing it, yes, at the moment. I am taking pitch meetings at Venice, everybody. So let's get a discussion in and let's do Glowworm. Okay, cool. All right. On that note, I think we should probably say goodbye. It's been a brisk but informative chat this week, Matthew.
I think so.
We will be back next week with more and with the lovely Jack Shepherd. But for now, I think we should say goodbye. So do say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And I will say goodbye too, in the style of Penelope Cruz. Ciao, 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 Bella, ciao. I'm off now.
If she's in the room.
Yeah, I'm off now to go and crawl under a table with my children. All right. Yeah. And that is it for today. We will see you next week. Goodbye. ¿Dónde está el hombre? Con fuego en la sangre. Just a whisper of a distant memory, just a dream, or so it seems. Take me back to the place I'd rather be. You left a fire in my eyes that lightens up the darkest skies. I'm giving up, I'm letting go, I'll find my